constantly turning down Ray's marriage proposals because she wanted to get her law career established first. Then there's Carol Ferris, who was the love interest of Hal Jordan, who is also known as the Green Miner. And she was the vice president of Ferris Aircraft until her father retired and then he put her in charge. And she decided to choose her work over her relationship with Hal Jordan because of ethical reasons. So we have these, you know, women who are, you know, kind of strong. Then we have Lois Lane. She cries a lot. She hopes to earn the right to be Mrs. Superman. And she blames herself when Superman doesn't want to marry her. So, which of these is not like the others? When she was introduced in 1938, Lois was really strong and she didn't always swoon over Superman. She was a tough-as-nails reporter. She was viewed as somebody uppity, and they thought she should be put in her place. So now, how ironic is it that Lois is this simpering woman when she was the one who shared the adventures with the strongest superhero of all? So what happened? Mort Weisinger happened. This is Mort Weisinger and the Witch of Metropolis. So, knowing about things like this is important because millions of children, an entire generation around the globe, they were reading these books. The Superman books were some of the best-selling comics in the world. And these comics influenced what children thought of gender roles during their formative ages. And all of these books, all of these Superman books, were influenced by one man. And that one man was not Superman. It was Mort Weisinger. So Mort was born in 1915to some immigrants, Jewish and Czechoslovakian immigrants. He was raised in the Bronx. He attended New York University. His father wanted him to do other things, and he decided he wanted to go into journalism and all of that. He experienced the Great Depression. He experienced misfortune with his family. His father lost his job. His business burned down. Things like this happened. But he started working in science fiction pulps, and he started a business even doing so with Julie Schwartz. And he was then hired at DC in 1941, then he got drafted. But he manipulated things enough so that when he came back, he actually had his job back. He got married in 1943 to a woman that he met on a train and said, and proposed like 3 hours later. He served in World War II. He had two children, Henry and Joyce, which we'll speak about a little bit later. And he worked for DC for 30 years. And he was the editor of the entire family of Superman books. And these included a lot. He edited 7 books of the Superman family. And although he didn't get credit on the books until 1959, he did edit all these books. And Paul Levitz said that it all revolved around Superman. And many times there would be stories written for the Superman book that ended up in Lois Lane, and books that were written for Jimmy Olsen that ended up in Superman. And, you know, everything was about Superman. It wasn't about Jimmy Olsen. It wasn't about Lois Lane. It was all Superman. It was a Superman's title. That was it. I mean, if you just look at the title of the book, Superman's Girlfriend, Lois Lane. It wasn't just Lois Lane. It was Superman's girlfriend. And that shows right there that Superman wasn't nearly as important as Superman. You want to join, or you want to eat?
You want me to, sure.
All right. Let's welcome Superman. This is guy. He's breaking into comics.
Yeah, be kind. He's new at this. So.
And he knows a little bit about Superman. Maybe a little bit. He doesn't know Superman's
Social Security. Everybody knows Superman's Social Security number.
You don't know it.
Yes, they do.
Because you know Clark Kent.
Funny. Comedy. Ladies and gentlemen, Tommy Stein's and Christy Blanche. Please, take the waiter.
I don't know why you always say people.
So what do we? I don't know why people say you're not funny. What are we talking about up here?
We're talking about Superman.
I apologize for being late. All right.
And Mort Weisinger. Okay.
We'll go with the flow.
Okay. So he did action comics, adventure comics, Superman, Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane, Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, another indication that Superman was the main focus here. World's Finest, Showcase, Superboy. So he had all of these books that he was in charge of and had control of. Now, family of writers that they had. They had a lot of amazing writers. But Mort was very involved in editorial.
Yeah.
He gave the plots to them. He said it saved them time, and then it didn't waste their time as the writer. So he said, this is what you do. At one time, Mort started business with Julie Schwartz, and they had authors submit stories to them, and they decided where it would be published. So this could be something that had to do with that. It's also known that he would turn down suggested plots and say, no, that's not good. But then he would take those plots and then give them to the other writers that came in. Hey, why don't you write about this? So they were all his ideas. He was brilliant.
Yeah.
And Mort was really more interested in the gimmick than the character. He would call a Marvel writer, Jim Shooter, who he influenced greatly, not for the good part. And he would call Shooter a Marvel writer because Jim cared about the character, not about the gimmick that was happening. And he also thought that the audience were 6 to 8 year olds and a few weirdos. So it wasn't really necessary to worry about characterization.
Well, to be fair, in that time period, that was a pretty universal assessment of the way people saw comics. That basically, if you were in any movie or TV show of the 50s or 60s, you know, if you saw an adult reading a comic book, that was shorthand for he's really stupid.
Yeah. Sometimes people think that even today. We're working on it. But Kurt Schaffenberger, who was the main artist on the Lois Lane books, he said it didn't make much difference who wrote the script because Mort would rewrite it to fit his mold. And he spoon-fed this plot to the writers. He kept a very tight rein on what the story was and the tone of the story, and the writers didn't vary from that. So it wasn't like he said, I'm finding the right people, letting them do their thing. That didn't happen. Mort really had really tight control on these characters and these stories. So Mort explained a lot about the ideas around Superman, why Superman had powers, but he really did bring a lot to, you know, this whole thing. He had the Phantom Zone, all the different varieties of kryptonite, the whole LL jokes, the Lois Lane, the Lana Lang, the Lori Lamaris. Yeah.
If I can just let me know.
Yes. Go ahead.
I was going to say that he, for all of his faults, and they were legion, Mort was very good about selling to kids and knew what kids wanted. And one of the things that he did that he accomplished beautifully is that Superman had been around since 1938. And Mort had sort of gotten a little bit of editorial control by the late 40s, but still was very much dictated by, every Superman story is pretty much the same. The whole mythos of Superman, all the stuff that we know today, the Fortress of Solitude and Kryptonite and all that stuff, those really weren't terribly present in the Superman stories. Most Superman stories were Superman fights gangsters at the end, or Superman fights aliens at the end. They were very incredibly repetitive. What Mort did start once he finally got full editorial control of Superman in the late 50s, he sort of made an informal rule where every 6 months at the latest, he wanted himself or his writers to introduce some new element of the mythos into the legend, whether it's the Bottle City of Kandor, or Supergirl, or Crypto the Superdog, or all of these things that we think of as Superman history really only happened between about 1958 and 1960, 61, in a very brief period of time. But that's because Mort was doing something that nobody else had done with Superman, which was just throwing a bunch of new stuff in and building an entire world and cosmos around him with the help of writers like Otto Binder and Leo Dorfman and Jerry Siegel and so forth and so on. So that's, you know, that was what he was doing at the time. I'm just giving you a little context and detail and stuff, but yeah.
No, and so for his faults, he did a lot of amazing things also.
And certainly, that's the stuff that I loved when I was a kid. Watching him build that mythos is, you know, that legend around Superman for all of his shortcomings as a human being, more entranced me as a kid, and it's probably one of the reasons I'm here today. So, however,
he did have some darker influences on the book also. He brought personality to the table, but it wasn't a pretty personality. Neil Adams once asked him why he was so grumpy all the time. So he asked him this question, because he was a really grumpy guy. Sometimes he would just throw scripts right in the trash in front of people, and he was just, he did some terrible things. And his comment was, try to imagine that you get up in the morning and you go into that bathroom to shave, you look in the mirror, and you see this face. Mort was bald and he was overweight. And in his universe in D.C., those are the two things you did not want to be. They were just, you didn't want to be those in his universe, you didn't want to be like those in real life.
Yeah, the worst that you had to do in a more wide-ranging comic were you were fat or you were bald or both. I mean, and think about it, Luther, bald and fat, Brainiac, bald, Toyman, fat, and so many stories written about Lois Lane having discovered somebody who looks a lot like Superman who reminds her, so, oh, you could be the perfect man for me, you can actually be the perfect, I forget Superman, I fall in love with this man who looks a lot like Superman, and then Augusta comes along at the end and blows his toupee off and the guy is bald and Lois is like, well, forget this. The end. And then that was, it's not a story he did once, it was a story he did a bunch of times.
Or as you can see here. He turned Lois fat many times. He turned Lois bald many times.
Exactly. He turned Superman fat, the worst thing you could do.
And his daughter Joyce, I interviewed her, and he said that that was a reflection of himself, that her dad criticized her weight and her looks constantly. And her brother said that his dad was very tough on his mom, and especially his sister. But fat and bald weren't the only ways that Mort's perceptions came out. Mort had been described, these are actual words that people use to describe him, overbearing, a slob, abusive, insecure, a toad, and had a voice that could drip scorn. So a lot of people quit because of Mort. Some developed like these occurring, you know, headaches because of him. And Mort really saw Superman as his alter ego. He said that he would imagine himself as Superman. And he went to a therapist at the request of his boss, Jack, because of many reasons. One, because he was jealous of Superman, and he admitted this. And I asked his daughter about this, and she said he didn't take his therapy seriously, and the few times that he did go, he made up stories to tell to the therapist. So that alone is very telling. And when Superman adopted very dictatorial tendencies, many of those who worked with him, they said that was a reflection of Mort's personality. That when Superman said, you know, I am the God, this is Mort. And so Mort was a really unhappy man, and he took his low self-confidence out on others. And the comics were the place that he got a chance to put his feelings on the stage about women. And under Mort's reign, Lois Lane was really the one who suffered.
That's true.
So let's talk about Lois. So Lois appeared in 1938 in Action Comics, the same one that, you know, the Superman appeared in. So she's been around just as long as Superman. She's a female reporter in the 40s and 50s, when that was really rare. So, you know, big step forward. She was a love interest for Clark Kent and Superman. They're the same person, if you didn't know that. I'm sorry. Sorry.
This panel's the worst.
Yeah. Darth Vader's the father. So, one of the...
What?
Oh!
And she was also, she's one of the best known popular culture characters worldwide. She was on TV. In the 50s, she became even bigger. She was in The Adventures of Superman. And the show ran from 1952 to 1958. And guess who served as the story editor on the show? Mort. He took trips out to California, and sometimes he'd be gone for 2 weeks, up to 4 months. And in an interview with Paul Levitz, he said that Lois on the TV and the Lois that people knew was the people that, everybody knew the Lois on TV. They didn't know the Lois from the comic. They knew the Lois on TV. So they tried to emulate her in the comics. And he said that they tried to imitate the Superman TV show, especially in the second season. This is when a big editor at DC, Ellsworth, took over as producer. And what happened is, in the show, there were two Lois Lanes. In the first season, Phyllis Coates was Lois Lane, and her portrayal was very similar to the Lois Lane of the comic. She was a tough-as-nails reporter. She was, you know, took flack for no one. In the second season, Noel Neal, the one that the Lois Lane most people know of, she came on board as Lois, and she was gentle, and she was kid-friendly, and she was more subservient, and she was meeker, and she was traditionally more feminine than the first Lois. This is the Lois that people knew. She was even featured in the Lois Lane comic book, as you can see right here. You know, Meet TV's Lois Lane. The very first letter published in the Lois Lane letter column asked about the TV show and the actors who played Lois. But if you'd love to see who the letter is from, right down here, it's from Hank Weisinger, which is Mort's son.
I smell a plant.
So this change of actors was step one. It opened the door to change the comic book. You could change this comic book Lois to not fit only the actors on TV, but also Mort's perceptions of what a woman of the era should be. Comics emulate culture. So let's look a little bit about what culture was like for women during that time. In the 50s, what were gender attitudes like? So as I was saying, comics reflect national current culture. In the 50s, women were starting to work outside of the home. In 1956, 35% of adult women were working. And a quarter of those were, married women. Women previously quit their jobs after marriage. That's what they did. They get married, they quit their jobs. Newspapers, magazines, all of this pop culture encouraged this return to the home. And society's problems were blamed on women working outside the home. The New York Times claimed that the male sanctuary is all but done because of these women. And after the war, there was this crisis of masculinity, and it was thought that men were either super masculine because of all the combat that they witnessed, or they had become unmanly. And the independence of women were blamed for that decline in male confidence, according to the Kinsey Report. There was a great quote Tom Pyre wrote, and there was a Lois Lane Archives edition, and it was the spotlight. And he wrote that along with the 1950s attitudes towards women, it magnified her neediness, her sneakiness, and her childishness. This is also reflected in the media. This is a real ad, this one here. Yes, this is a real ad. She bought the wrong kind of coffee. I know. Don't get any ideas. So these attitudes can be seen in the media from the time and in Superman. And many people would write in and say Superman should spank Lois because she misbehaved. And Mort answered some of these letters. And he said, he has superpowers. She wouldn't be able to walk for a week. The answer wasn't, because this is a robot up here, one of his robots back here. But the answer wasn't, oh, she's a grown woman, maybe he shouldn't do that, you know. And a lot of times these letters were written by the publishers and Mort's son. Anything you can add?
Nope.
Okay. In the 60s and 70s, this embodied the sexist nightmare of the professional woman who didn't know her place and she was constantly stepping on men's toes. They needed to be reminded of their place. Now, social change is everywhere. More and more women were in the workforce. In 1963, you have the Feminist Mystique being published. In 1966, you have the National Organization for Women forming. So times were changing. And DC reacted somewhat to the change. The main Lois Lane artist, Kurt Schaffenberger, said he was to keep current with the clothing styles. So he first used Sears and Roebuck, that catalog, but he quickly realized he needed something groovier. So he went and bought fashion magazines. And Paul Levitz noted that at this time, TVs and movies were changing their attitudes a lot quicker. Because there was a younger generation of writers there. They were going into that field. While at DC Comics, there's still this small group of mostly older men doing the writing and the editing. And so all of this anxiety during this time was taken out on Lois, either consciously or subconsciously, because many of the themes really mirror what was going on in Mort's life. For example, Lois sometimes got it really bad because Mort did bring his issues to the table. When the cultural attitudes of the time were mixed with those perceptions, poor Lois didn't stand a chance. So there's more than just being fat and bald, and it did happen to Lois, as you can see here. In one issue, Superman made Lois fat without telling her, but it was for her own good, you know. But there's some great lines in it. She has to shop at the Big Girl Shop. Yep. That's the name of it, the Big Girl Shop. She sits in a chair and breaks it. I mean, it's really terrible. But according to sources, Mort was an unhappy man, and he took his low self-confidence out on others. He was showing off checks to people from different books that he did, you know, showing people that he was something. Jim Shooter said that Mort adored his wife, but some people say that he'd often berate her in front of people. And his children remember having to leave restaurants with their mother, but he threw a fit about the service or the food because it was so embarrassing, and they would go stand outside and wait until he finished, and then would come out. And Superman would yell at Lois and make her cry a lot. Again, many times it was for her own good. And so Mort liked to make people feel bad about themselves, yelling and name-calling and insulting them. And Superman, who's supposedly the perfect man, often did the same thing. Like Superman, Mort liked to play practical jokes on women. He once pulled a prank on his wife's friend, Mary. Mort and a friend took Mary into New York City, and on the way, they gave her an empty cup and told her to give it to the man in the toll booth, and he would fill it with coffee for her. And when he did, the toll taker, of course, just stared at her, dumbfounded, and, oh, they just laughed and recounted that a lot.
Stupid woman.
And as you can see here, Superman played numerous jokes on Lois. As you can see here, there's Lois's super lesson here. Here's Superman and Batman, because now I just gave away his.
Don't tell anybody it's Bruce Wayne.
Bruce Wayne and Superman played a joke on Lois, and they're just laughing away. And they're, ha-ha, she's so dumb.
That is the single most grotesque image of Superman I have ever seen. Every Superman image ever. That one still haunts me. He is just having the worst laugh at her expense.
Oh, yeah. So, Mort would make people feel stupid. He once told Jim Shooter, who I also interviewed, he was 14 at this time. Jim Shooter, 14. And he would call him, and he would tell him on Thursday nights, he would call him. And Jim says that still, the sound of a telephone ringing makes him jump. He told him that he was a bleeping idiot, and said he was his charity case. And he repeatedly told people he would use their script to wipe his leap. He made people feel helpless. And this is how Superman made Lois feel. Made stupid by tricking her into doing things, or doing things like turning her into a helpless baby. So she knows that she's inside this baby, but she can't do anything. So he was asked at one time, you know, why people would have respect for dumb Lois. And this is his answer. When you were a kid and your parents told you the story of Cinderella and how at the stroke of 12 her fine coach and clothes turned to a pumpkin and rags, her footmen to mice and so on, how come you never questioned why one thing didn't change? That glass slipper. Why not? Nobody has ever asked why it didn't turn back into a rotten old shoe. I call that the Cinderella fallacy, and that's the same sort of license we exercised in Superman. People buy it. So it's okay for Lois to be dumb. And if you can't see here, this is one of my favorite covers of all time. Lois Lane is in there, and Lana Lang, who is the past girlfriend. And he tells them, you know, I'll tell you why I'll never marry you, Lois Lane, or Lana Lang. I'll never marry anybody stupid enough to not know that I am Clark Kent when I take my glasses off. No, Superman when I take my Clark Kent glasses off. So here he has lied to her, and he expects them to believe him. And then when they do trust him, then they're stupid. I just love that. So in 1970, Mort retired from D.C. to concentrate in his own writing and doing a lecture service, a circuit. And by this time, new blood had come into D.C. And you've also got the second wave of feminism happening. This is really also reflected in the comics. Lois Lane became more independent, more sexy. You know, here, this is one of my favorite covers. I love this cover where they've got, you know, she rips off the girlfriend and throws it in the ground. I just think that's amazing. But there were things that she had to deal with here, too. She also became very sexualized. You know, she appears in very modest clothing for most of her run through Mort, and then all of a sudden she's, you know, wearing bikinis here and tied down, or she's got this pose here, which is on a lot of different covers with different projectiles coming at her. This is not the only example of that. Unfortunately, you can pretty much go through any of those covers and find them. They're really easy to find. So, Mort Weiser was really a product of his time. He was an unhappy individual, and he made others miserable. So combining that, his representation of gender roles really shaped and influenced this generation of children, and not always in a good way. Mark Wade here, when I interviewed him about this, he said, "Everything emotionally crippling about me, I learned from Ward."
That's true.
So, thank you, and if you have any questions, we'll take those.
It is true. It is fascinating.
Do you have anything to add, Mark?
Well, no, I'm just filling in while they were thinking of their brilliant questions. I was going to say that it is fascinating to me that his influence, like not Superman's influence, but also Mort's influence through Superman, cannot be understated to children all over the world of the 1950s and 1960s. And there are generations of children, because Superman was published in 38 different countries. Superman was published in 25 different languages. Superman was published all around the world, the single greatest, best-known fictional character in all of human culture at that time. And all of these stories were coming out from Mort's office. And so it's not just American kids who are learning that this is how gender politics works, or this is how, you know, this is what's good and bad. It's, you're spreading that message to children all over the world, and there are so many good things about what you learn from Superman about you know, might does not make right, and about how smarter is better than stronger, and about being selfless and putting other people first. These are all the positive lessons that you learn from Superman as a kid, but only as an adult do I kind of come in and look at it from this other weird cracked mirror version of, yeah, but there's also really screwy things that got imprinted on people's psyches when they were 10, 11, 12 years old. It's not just me. It's a lot of this stuff. I mean, one of the other things that it doesn't really have to do with Lois, so it's not as specific to this, but the other worst thing that can happen to you in the Superman universe, and it's so reflective of Mort, is you can lose the love of your loved ones. Like every Marvel Comics cover of the 1960s is the Fantastic Four battling Dr. Doom, or Spider-Man dealing with the Scorpion, action, you know, drama, stuff. Every Superman cover of that era is Superman being run out of town while people throw rotten vegetables at him going, "Superman, we don't need you anymore. Superman, we hate you." Or the world waking up and forgetting who Superman is, or whatever. This is such a recurrent theme, and that's because, again, Mort was so insecure and just so convinced that he was so unlovable and so, you know, again, his self-esteem was so low. You know, that's how it came out in the comics. The worst thing that can happen to you is if people don't love you anymore or withhold their love. That is, you know, if you're in the Marvel Universe, the worst thing that happened is Dr. Doom attacks. But in the DC Universe, that's the worst thing that can happen, is somebody can say, "I don't want you around anymore." Yeah.
Two questions. First, I agree with you that there's a negative influence here being put out of the DC offices, about Mort's offices, about through these depictions of women. But I notice on your iPad it says approved by the Comics Code.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking then about the counter argument that we as liberals, small L liberals, always use about EC Comics. Well, you know, this isn't having a negative influence on children. And then I think, well, wait a minute, I just said this more wiser stuff is having a negative influence on children. So I'm wondering, like, there's a disconnect in here somewhere, and I haven't figured it out, and I'm wondering what you think about it.
Well, I think some of those covers of EC were horrible, and they're still nightmares to me, you know, the one with somebody, you know, holding a head with a bloody axe and then stripping and the lady's face is all...
Yeah, but it's in good taste for a horror comic.
But it's a horror comic, exactly. And that's the thing. And I'm not going to give that horror comic, you know, to my six-year-old and go, "Ooh, read this." But I should be able to give them a Superman comic. So I think that's the big difference, is that the horror comics, that's a different audience. The Superman comics... No, this is what this is supposed to be for.
Yeah, I mean, there are two factors. One is that with more stuff, it was a little more insidious because it wasn't graphic, it wasn't violent, it wasn't, and also because it was much more a product of the time. I mean, these were also the same gender and sexual attitudes that were being introduced through all other media as well. Uh-huh. It's just that when you look at the Mort stuff through that prism of low self-esteem, it's really sort of makes it look, in retrospect, with 2020 hindsight, a lot darker and more insidious. I'm going to speak for you. I don't want to I'm speaking of this from a fascination standpoint, not even really from a critical standpoint, because I don't want to in any way undersell all the good, positive things that Superman has been or means to children all over the world for the last 75, 80 years. I just put this one sliver of it. The more I pick at it, the more I sort of look under the rocks, the more the research we do. And like, wow, I still am not sorry. I am not sorry little Mark Waid read Superman comics. But, man, that's some creepy stuff.
Little Mark
Waid. He was this tall. Yes, sir.
I definitely agree that everything you said about the positive influence of Superman, and that definitely is most of your work, 99% of your work has that. I just wanted to focus on the 1% maybe that doesn't have that, and irredeemable. Where it seems like you really focused on that emotionally crippled superhero and how that would play out. I'm just wondering how you approach that and talk about that first.
That came from the whole idea of the worst thing that can happen to you is people withholding their love and people not wanting to. And that was the defining characteristic between those who don't know. I wrote a series called The Irredeemable, which was 37 issues or 38 issues, something like that. It was sort of an examination of that sort of everything we've talked about in comic book form, in the sense of this is what Superman would have been like if he'd grown up without loving parent figures, without people who cared about him and made him feel accepted and loved and taken in, even though he was different. Instead, this is a Superman who is very much the same, but this is a character called a Plutonian who was brought up, like, frankly, as would happen in the real world, where the first time he shows powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men, his adoptive parents would freak out and take him back to the orphanage and give me a normal kid. That's no coincidence. That is something that I drew upon very heavily here.
And his relationship with women in that series.
It really screwed up. That's my thesis in 38 issues. Yes.
And you had another question?
I did. I guess I'm thinking more about some of the positive things that are about this era as well as the negative things.
Sure.
I mean, for example, he sold the Lois Lane comic for 100 and some issues.
137 issues.
Plus Superman Family. That's pretty amazing.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, we had a really great Lois Lane one-shot last year by Margaret Bennett, but it was just one issue.
Yeah.
So he clearly had something going there that was...
Oh, yeah. And the whole thing is, though, anything with Superman's name on it at that time would sell. It just would. It wasn't really a Lois Lane book or a Jimmy Olsen book.
It was Superman. They really wanted to do more. They were constantly trying to get more to do more Superman titles. I mean, there was a Superboy's girlfriend Lana Lang comic on the boards for a long time that never happened. There was. I think that was the one that came closest that never happened. But Mort, as much as he liked his job and as much as he cared about Superman. This is the most I can do in a day, so back off. I don't want to do any more Superman comics. But you can't let anybody else do them, because it's my little fiefdom.
Yes, sir.
Do you guys think that Lois Lane has recovered from Mort? So, within your class, we read Mark's Birthright. Lois Lane kind of plays a bit part in that, although you do have strong women, like you change the way his mother, Superman's mother is and stuff like that. But, one of the arguments I've heard, not being privy to what was going on in D.C., was they dissolved the marriage because they're like, what do we do with a married Lois Lane? And I feel like there should still be room for something. You know, she's a reporter, so she, in a way, she's doing the same thing as him. She should still be like, sorry, I can't make dinner, I got to cover this thing or whatever, instead of just, oh, Superman didn't come. Yeah. So do you think even till today we're still living with the ramifications of Mort's Lois Lane?
I would read a Lois Lane book in a heartbeat. I would. Lois Lane, girl reporter. Yes, I'm in. Where do I sign up? I just would, because I love Lois Lane. I will go on record saying I hate the fact that Lois Lane and Superman are not together, because I think they belong together.
Not necessarily married, but you mean as a couple in
yes,
this universe?
Yes. I don't care if they're dating, if they're married, if they're together. Nothing against Wonder Woman. She's awesome, too. But,
you know, I've never heard Wonder Woman say anything bad about you.
Plus, we know from Kingdom Come that, you know, eventually they have a baby.
So. Eventually.
But yeah, but Lois is gone by then.
She's gone by then. I'm with you. I think Lois and Superman should actually be a couple. I don't think they should be married.
They don't have to be married.
I don't want that. I oppose that marriage with every fiber of my being, not because I don't think they're right for each other, not because I have any issues with the institution of marriage, but just because the fundamental paradigm of Superman, Lois, and Clark being a love triangle between two people is something that is so unique in fiction that this is the thing you have to bear in mind when you're caretaking characters that have been around for 50, 60, 70, 80 years. It's very easy to break them and very hard to put them back together again. It's very easy to bust the toys because you think, oh, this is cool, I'll get Batman Heat Vision. and that'll be this meeting, and then you're screwed up. This is a true story. In 1987, I was on staff at DC Comics, and I got a hold of a sheaf of old memos for the last couple, 3 years that have been around the editorial staff. And one of the things that was in there was a big, giant list. This is going up to Crisis on Infinite Earths, when the other DC editors were sort of confabbing with each other about what maybe they could take advantage of in this universe and change and fix. And if you're going to do this big global, you know, continuity-spanning thing, how do you improve some of these characters? What different things do you do with them? And there's a list of like 50 or 60 things. And some of them, a very few of them happen. You know, kill Supergirl, you know, Barry Allen, kill whatever. But spoilers for a 30-year-old story. But, and there's other that didn't happen. You know, Elongated Man dies or whatever, this or that, whatever. But the one I will never forget, and that my hand to God, this is the God's honest truth, is they spend about a paragraph talking about, this is Roy Thomas and Jerry Conway. I'm talking about, there's this one DC character who has been around for a long time, but he's really faded, and he really feels like he's old hat by now, and he can't do anything that the other superheroes can't do better, and it's not, you know, we like him, but he's seen better days, so what we really need to do is give him superpowers like flight, and even wings that come out of the back of his and we need him enhanced senses, and that character is Batman. Batman in 1986 to them was broken, so what they were going to do was fix Batman by giving him superpowers. Now, can you imagine what a stupid, short-sighted decision this would make? And yet, if they'd done that, then you're stuck with, now you've broken the toy. You know, now what are you going to do? You can't put that toy back in the box. And this is my rant about the Superman-Lois marriage, is that I think a lot of great stories came out of it. I think a lot of incredibly talented people told good stories about married Lois and married Superman over the years, but I am just very protective as a historian, as a caretaker, and as a writer of these characters that I love, in the sense that you just begin to be very careful about what you break or what changes you make that are going to be permanent, because it's so easy. No one, if anybody knew how to invent a new Superman, they do it already, but nobody knows. If anybody knew how to invent a new Spider-Man, they would, but they don't. The alchemy, the magic of how these things happen, and one character gets to be a legend in a cartoon and a movie and a bunch of comics, and another character invented at the same time just sinks to the surface. It's not, or sinks to the bottom. It's not just a matter of, oh, this guy, the creators were more talented, or the costume was cooler, or anything like that. There's always some sort of X factor to it. I mean, Batman appeared, but this, you know, there were a bunch of other superheroes or costume characters happening at the same time. Batman survived, a lot of them didn't. Superman could very easily have gone the way of Woody Woodpecker or Betty Boop or, you know, Felix the Cat, and nobody's telling stories about it anymore. You should be really careful. I know I'm way off on a tangent, but that's, you know, that to the background of your question, to some degree, you know, I don't think we're suffering so much under the, I think Lois has pretty much gotten out from under the shadow of Walt Weisinger, until you see something like Man of Steel and the first line of dialogue is, oh, I gotta pee. Like, that really, that's your line in the sand, you're gonna take charge and explain who Lois Lane is to a brand new generation, that she's a tough, take no prisoners,
reporter, but she's got to pee. That's her opening line. So, I don't know.
You spend a lot of time thinking about this, don't you?
I really spend a lot of time thinking about this. Yes, I do.
Also, you should do a Felix the Cat for Dynamite.
There you go, Felix the Cat. Yeah. I'm sorry, it's right behind my Andy Panda series. And I'm
pitching. Oh, breaking news. Okay.
Anybody else?
I play more role-playing games than I read comics, but there's a huge crossover I see in like my insecure friends, for example, taking out their real-life insecurities through their characters, usually in negative ways, or even breaking character to start fights, etc.
Without getting specific, without throwing your friend to the boss, give us an example.
Oh, man.
Practice.
So the best one, my friend has a really overbearing father who always gives him crap whenever we're in the same room with all three of us, and most of his characters are like broken princes, totally exiled from his father or completely in control, like to the point of even being like a half dragon bastard to an ancient red dragon that just even sets it up such that when he dies his soul gets trapped in hell just to be an additional slave in the afterlife. Like all of this, like to the point that every second of his life is just continually being wronged by the people around him. So as wrong as it was, like, do you think that it was actually therapeutic for him? Or like, what was his life after retirement? Like, are there any records of what became of it? Or was the only true issue that we take out our pain on a fictional character was simply that it was public?
Yeah, that's a good question. The glib answer is his life after Superman was very short. He retired early in 1970. I think 1975, 76.
Yeah,
he passed away. He didn't make it through to the 1970s.
I mean, he did a lot of touring and talking, and he was writing his books.
But that's a very good question. That's a question I don't think we delved enough into about what was more in any way fundamentally different as a person once he left the job.
I don't think he was. I don't think he was, but there's not a whole lot that we have found out about him during that time. We'll just have to look into that a little bit more.
That's a good point, though. Thank you.
Now to think about that.
Thank you.
Cool.
One of the things you started talking about, in the 70s, that Lois Lane and most female comic characters got very sexualized.
Uh-huh.
And we talk about like Halloween, where you can be a sexy candy corn.
It's all sexy Freddy Krueger.
Those things. To me, granted, I grew up with the Christopher Reeve Superman, so I grew up in the early 80s. I actually find that more disturbing in a lot of ways than Lois crying.
Interesting, the Lois hypersexualized?
That's kind of the latest movies, which I hated, and we debate about this all the time.
You're right.
You're wrong.
It just seems like, she was buttoned up again, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But that they just, and I struggle with this too. I am not a Lois fan at all, but it's mostly because she's not a superhero.
Yeah.
Where like Ferris had, where she turns into a superhero, and for me, the girlfriends, those are the ones I kind of tie into more. So I was just wondering what your thought is as we keep going, especially the movies. I mean, New 52 is great, but as the movies really inform the greater society, because there's a lot more people that watch the movies in Smallville than in the comic books.
People know who Lois Lane is from Erica Durant than they do from any 150 comics published in their lifetime. I think I like the idea of Lois more than I actually like most of the Lois I've ever seen on print in comics and stuff.
Well, it's kind of like Wonder Woman. People can't figure out what to do with her.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk because of the new movie about.
Yeah. There's so many, nobody really knows what to do about Wonder Woman. Nobody knows what to do with Lois. And so, the idea of Lois is really good. And there's certain Loises. There's a bug.
Yeah.
There's certain Loises that I love, and I didn't have a problem with, the Lois Lane and the newest Man of Steel, except she really didn't do anything, that I can think of. She couldn't even at the end, turn the key. We have to wait until a guy came along and went, oh, let me do it. I don't know. I'm disturbed by both versions of Lois Lane. What gets me is that she was such this, in a time when women reporters were very few and far between, and working outside the home was very, didn't happen that often, to middle class people, not lower class. She was a strong female, hope, and then just turned into this, oh, Superman, please marry me.
She was in the 30s and 40s. She was a very progressive character. A very progressively written character, a very strong woman in a man's world, and then all his menfolk came back from the war, and we had to put all these women who had been elevated quote unquote to men's positions during war, and we needed them to take these jobs. And we came back from the war, and we're like, okay, well now we're done, and you guys can go back to where you were, and that, and Lois went through that same sort of paradigm shift as well too, so. That's what we're. That's the lasting legacy of sexualism and sexual politics, more so than anything Gore did.
Yeah. I'd say that the version of Lois that I love is the animated cartoon with Tim Daly was the voice of Superman. Lois kicks butt.
Oh, she was awesome. That may be my favorite Lois. That's it. Yeah. I never warmed to Margaret Kidder. I don't know why. Maybe she was so harsh.
I like her in the DK series.
And Terry Hatcher.
Terry Hatcher was very cool.
I think we got time for like one more.
One more question? Yes, sir.
So, as do you think there's any meat on the bone if you go back to this era where Lois is being ridiculed and subjugated and made fun of and transformed, and write a story where Superman like gets to a place where he like apologizes? Like an Alan Moore take on it or something, comes in, and just like says, let's fix this crap up, man, and let's the bill's due now.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, that hangs a lantern on it. It's like you're doing a Huck Finn story and saying, okay, I'm sorry we use the N-word. It doesn't make the original story any better. It just sort of, it's a clever, like, tongue-in-cheek joke, but I just think Know what history has brought, so we don't repeat it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
But good question. So,
I was just wondering what your favorite Lois story is of all time. If you were thinking of one, I think mine is probably Louise Simonson's Man of Steel. I think it was 62 or 63 when they went on the honeymoon and Clark had lost his powers and somehow they got kidnapped by doesn't matter who and Lois saved them and it was a lot of fun. I'm wondering what you thought was your favorite.
Like when accidentally goes from the rocket ship. When they
more specific, please.
When they trigger, she's in the rocket.
We still only narrowed it down to 20 stories. that's a really good question. I can tell you my favorite Superman story, my favorite Batman story, my favorite Robin story, my favorite. And I never thought about what my favorite Lois Lane story is. And
you know why? Because they're basically a lot of them are the same story.
Yeah, 137 issues, but really
it's like, oh wait, I like the one where she met the guy that she thought was Superman. Oh wait, or the ones there was a boxer who looked she thought was Superman, or
I think my favorite, and this is not, I guess you gotta go downstairs, but my it doesn't hold up well, and it certainly is impolitic to say this, but so please let me finish my answer before I'm castigated. But I think my favorite Lois Lane story is I Am Curious Black, where she uses Kryptonian technology to turn herself for 24 hours into a black woman and live among and see what life is like for in those shoes. And as heavy-handed as it was still a well-intended story for 1970. It was still pretty progressive for 1970. Yeah. And what I like about that story is less the obvious things that you would expect, but there is a moment in the story where she turns to Superman and says, "Will you marry me now?" And he doesn't answer the question well. He answers the question as well as he possibly can, which is Lois, I can't marry you at any. I can't marry anybody. But I love the fact that in that moment she asked the question, like, would you marry me now? And I love that moment. That made me my favorite Lois moment.
But then she quickly turns back.
But then she, well, not intentionally, but she then, yeah, she, then actually, time runs out and she turns back into one.
Intentionally for the writers.
That's true.
it's not based on a true story.
It's not based on a true story.
Intentionally. Yes, intentionally. And she turns back. Yeah. And so he really doesn't have to answer
and
the
have
question.
To answer the question.
Yeah. So it kind of saves him.
Listen, I've got to be downstairs at 3.
Okay, well, panel's over anyway.